Hello up there, and good evening, dear friends, ladies and gentlemen, bozos and bozoettes, and all the newcomers tonight. Welcome to a Fireside Chat for August the 13th, 2015. My name is DJ Tweeny, a.k.a. Kurt from Austin, Texas, and I'll be spinning the bits for you for the next couple of hours. Tonight, we have a very special treat for you, an interview with Fireside David Ostman. We'll be talking about what's going on with him these days, and he'll also tell us about the making of the Radio Now live concert album, the first half of which we'll hear a little later on. We'll let you know when David is available to answer your chat questions, so have them at the ready. Now let's get Mr. Ostman on the Skype phone. Just one moment, please.
Hello, hello.
Good evening, David, and how are you and Judith this evening?
I'm good. Let me turn up the sound here. I had it kind of turned down.
Okay.
For the music. There we are. And am I on?
You are on, sir. We are hearing you.
Well, greetings to everyone. I see there's quite a gang out there.
Pretty good bunch.
Yeah, indeed. As always. Yes. Well, I have done some research on the question of that Radio Now Live album. Went back to my journals of the time. I do have some stories about that might be interesting to people. I don't know. You never know. So you got to get me going. What's happening with me at the moment? Lots of things are going on here, mostly here on the island. But you know, I've been. I also went down, as anybody who looks at my Facebook page would know, I went down to California to do a day's shoot in Orson's movie, $5,000, a Western, a wonderful Western, in which I played the old prospector and got seriously shot in the process.
Oh, my goodness.
But I finally have another IMDb listing, so that's a good thing.
Okay.
Or I will when the movie's released, anyway. And speaking of that, Orson and the Ironwood Gang's movie, The Phoenix Project, is downloadable on Hulu now, and it's also on the usual film places. So check it out.
Great. If we could get some links for that, that would be great.
Yeah, I can do that. I can send that along. Why am I praising my son? Well, he gave me a job, for one thing. And he was here on the island for about 10 days, for another thing, with his lovely girlfriend, and Katie. And they've gone now to the East Coast to spread the joy around the country. So there's been a lot of family. Preston was here with his band, O-Face, and played a concert here on their way around the country. He's now in Philadelphia, where he lives. And that leaves Judith and me here on a very, very dry Whidbey Island. Very, extremely dry here. Not quite California, but close.
Hmm.
So what's up with you? What do you need to know?
Well, we can start just about any place, but I was going to ask you about those lovely pictures of the boat that you put on Facebook and all that yachting you were doing.
Hardly a yacht. It's a wonderful sailboat, though, owned by friends of ours who live in Langley. They used to live right across that bay. The bay that we were on is called Holmes Harbor, and it's almost a fjord. It's like 10 miles long and about a mile or so wide, and it's what our house looks at. We are on the west side looking east, so we get fantastic moonrises here. We've been in this house for 28 years now, so...
Well, sounds nice.
It's well inhabited. So we were out on the bay with our friends Jeff and Alix, and about once a summer, we take this wonderful sail up from the south end of the bay. It really runs almost due north and south, and it's probably where the huge earthquake crack is going to happen, right under our bay.
Oh,
it will just drain out one day, just like that. But that's Jeff's boat. Jeff is retired now, but he used to be a ship broker, and he's quite a sailor. He's been across the Atlantic four times. I mean, sailing across the Atlantic. Wow. Great stuff. Great stuff. There are a lot of very maritime people here, fishermen, as you can imagine, and boaters of all kinds. We just take advantage of our friends.
Have you heard anything at all about Fukushima? Have the fishermen talked about that at all?
They did, you know, when it was a bit more in the news, hardly anything. Now, this is big fishing season right off our western shore here, and no one has said anything about atomic-powered fish out there. They're definitely hauling them in, and crab, there's places, all I can talk about here is crab right now. Everybody's got their crab pots out.
Very nice. I'm from the eastern shore of Maryland, so you can imagine I love crabs.
Oh, yeah. Well, there, this is one of the great places, so they say. I'm not a great crab fan, but so they say, and oysters and all that kind of thing. Whidbey Island, lots of people come here, come through here on holiday, on their way to the Olympic Peninsula, on their way to Canada. So it's not as far off the beaten path as you might think. And we've been doing regular cabarets here. I've posted some photos from about once a month. We do a cabaret, which is more or less literary on top of being musical. Some great pals here, writers and musicians here on the island. And that's at the Ott Murphy Winery, which is easily Facebookable or Googleable, and a great place to come to if you are on the island. It's great wine, and they're dear friends, and there's always really good music there. So that's been going on locally. I also officiated a wedding. I posted a picture of that.
Officiated?
Officiated, yeah. I've done, it's, you know, Universal Life Church. I've done maybe a dozen, 15 weddings over the years. I married Phil and Melinda.
I did not know that.
Years ago, in I think it was in 92, and that was an occasion for a great reunion of the Fire Sign. Wow. As everybody came to Phil's wedding, and why not?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've done it here on the island with... And this was very sentimental because the young woman, Brooke, who was marrying this really nice guy, Chris, Brooke had been at Judith and my wedding as a three-year-old. She was the balloon girl, like the flower girl. Mm-hmm. So it's a great coming around again. It's these little things, you know, we don't even live in a town, but if you live in a small place.
I'm kind of trying to picture the Reverend Barnstormer holding a marriage ceremony. Yeah. How that would turn out.
Well, you know, people have asked me about that. I had a good chance to go into it, you know, but I had to save it for comedy occasions. It was just too sentimental and sweet.
It was pretty tempting.
Too sweet. And I did do another episode, number 4 of The Cook and the Comic, for Whidbey TV, which nobody can see, but I think there's a preview if you go to Whidbey Telecom.
Is there any way to get that stuff on Facebook?
And I can't.
Or YouTube, rather?
It's proprietary in the sense that Whidbey TV is this home-owned. It is our everything. It's our telephone company. It's our the internet. It's everything here on South. They have a very funny, it's just South Whidbey Island, and a little island called Hat Island that's out in the Sound, and a piece of Canada that's called Point Roberts that was made when they drew the line, finally. They drew it so there were a couple of miles south, was still the United States, so Point Roberts, they also have phone company there. And so The Cook and the Comic is part of their programming that makes people want to subscribe to Whidbey TV.
Sure.
And you can catch a clip of it on Whidbey Telecom, on their regular location. And it's funny. I do it with Gordon Stewart, who's a wonderful chef and loves dealing with audiences. And we did this one at the local Saturday market, farmer's market, in front of an audience. So that was a lot of fun to do as well. So, you know, got all kinds of irons in various fires, I guess, I got to say.
Sounds like a very fun place.
Yeah, and we've been kind of here. Well, I flew to California for Orson, but we've been basically here since we came back from the Mark Time event in Kansas City, Mo.
Mm-hmm.
And we were out then for about 10 days. We were back east for Preston's graduation from Bard. So it was a very busy early spring, and we love the summer here so much that we're not really willing to get off the island. And besides, it's a 5-boat wait to get around here, to get a ferry boat. It's really a long wait in summertime.
Do you want to talk about the Mark Time Awards a little?
Sure. Last year, the guys who've been doing it decided that after 17 years, they just couldn't do it again. And so it was out there, and Judith said, why don't we take it over? And I looked at her as if to say, why would we do that, honey? And but she had a lot of ideas connected with it, including an educational program at what I guess you would call an inner city, a minority school in Kansas City, called Paseo, which is an arts centered high school. And so she went back there and did a number of training sessions, kind of whittling down people who wanted to do radio of some kind, audio radio. And finally, when I went out there, there were about a dozen kids. And we put together about half a dozen pieces that they had written, they had produced, and they presented live at the Mark Time event. So it was cool. It was really big for them and very cool, very cool. One was really a radio noir kind of mystery, very effective. And one was a girl who did all of her sound effects and voice altering effects by using various apps on her smartphone. So she played all the parts. And another was a very scary, spooky piece, which was, you know, so these fit the general contours of the award, which go to genres, science fiction, which has always been the Mark Time Award, with Bill Stout's picture of my 1971 face. Maybe it was my 1969, a long time ago anyway. 76, I guess, but he did that cartoon back in 76 anyway. So Bill did another one for the Nick Danger Prize, which is for detective fiction, detective mystery. And that, of course, is the late and beloved Phil Austin in that part. Similarly, Peter is memorialized with the Bradshaw, which is an award to someone in the field for their contribution to audio theater, radio drama, whatever you want to call it. And and Mr. Proctor, in his kind of Janus two-faced way, is Betty Jo, and that was awarded to the best ensemble of actors and the best individual actor.
Wow.
In the shows. And there were, you know, there were more than a couple of dozen. I don't know how many altogether, but there were a lot of submissions. A number of the award winners were available to come down to Kansas City, which is wonderfully centrally located. We were a part of a live performance, as we always have been. This one was hooked up with Daryl Brogdon's comedy show, which is done in Lawrence, Kansas. I was on his show so many years ago. We had to calculate, maybe 28 years ago. I was on his on his comedy show. Good writer, wonderful actors. May not have been the most appropriate context. We were also a part of the Here Now Festival, but kind of an adjunct to that event. But we got over the first year. We are now in proud possession of these wonderful drawings of Bill Stout's that commemorate Firesign. And next year, probably in June next year, we'll have the 19th annual Mark Time Awards. And it will be a much larger event. And we'll be announcing more and more as that goes along and is open to submissions via the Mark Time Awards page, but probably we will have a simplified process because our judges were having trouble getting, you know, multiple different kinds of downloads at various speeds or I don't know what all, but they're all going to be regularized next time. And we do have a wonderful panel of judges for this festival, including Phil and Una, and as a matter of fact, Phil cast really the deciding vote for the award for the
So it's really a lot more complex than just the Mark Time Award itself. Obviously.
Yes, it's because we want to include the genres that people are working in, and we want to encourage work in the field. That's why we're going into the public schools and developing a curriculum, which is really a listening, and then developing your own work out of listening. And I'll tell you, if you get one person. You feel lucky. It's like any other teacher. It's like any other craft. You can have a wood shop, but who's the guy who's going to be the master carpenter? There's only going to be one, you know, if you're lucky. And so that's kind of that's the teaching aspect of it. And the awards are quite are taken very seriously, and why shouldn't they be, by the award winners, because they attach them to their work. It's meaningful, and now it's really something that the entire Firesign Theater is represented now, instead of just me, my face.
Yeah, I had no idea. That's very cool.
Yeah, so that's what's happening there, and there'll be more about it as the year develops and we get our systems a little more organized. Mm. But for the first time around, it was very successful, and it will almost surely be in Kansas City once again next year.
Well, another thing I wanted to ask you about was, we had talked previously about some archives that you've got, and wondered if there was any progress on restoring those archives.
Well, there hasn't been any considerable progress. I can't make an announcement that they're going to be somewhere convenient, but I'm talking to people about it. That's A. And B, there's a very important subset of that archive, which is what Peter left to me of the right. original Oz tapes. Mm-hmm. And those, I'm thinking maybe we should even have we should do something possibly publicly funded, you know?
Sure.
We're just thinking about that right now. I think everything else that's coming down the pipe in Firesign land is not something that we look for what's it called, public sourcing or whatever the word is,
crowdsourcing,
that's the word, because we're looking at the new book that is see, Taylor's working on all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. So we got the double DVD of all the early movies. That is coming out any time, and we're waiting for that.
Good deal.
And then he's working on a book which is assembling all of the ephemeral material that we wrote or had a part of, and that includes the Mixville Rocket and all of the, which I edited, things that other people edited, the Crawdaddy pieces. And it's going to be quite, that's going to be quite an interesting volume, and that's something that Taylor is doing. There were rumors of a Firesign Theater documentary, but I haven't heard much about that. I would like to see our, really it's going to be our 50th anniversary, as everybody knows.
Pretty incredible.
Next year, And so I figure we're going to be celebrating that as the year goes on. So really the first Radio Free Oz was July 24th of 1966. And it would be really wonderful to be able to, between then and the end of the year, be able to release in some sort of sensible order and arrangement Peter's Radio Free Oz broadcast and get them up on the Radio Free Oz site, which I must apologize about because I don't spend Facebook reminds me you haven't gone to this site, and it's like it's enough to keep up with mine and all of the stuff that's on that and put anything on it, and
then Facebook can take some time.
It really can. If you've got Facebook plus Firesign plus the new Firesign, which people have to ask to get in, whatever that is, I didn't quite understand that. And then you've got Chromium Switch, which is wonderful, but you have to know about it.
I advertise them all here.
So and if you do go to firesigntheater.com, virtually everything's there. What I found at Chromium Switch, which was amazing, was a YouTube button. And suddenly I'm in 100 things on YouTube.
Oh, yeah, the YouTube site is full of Firesign stuff.
Unbelievable. And I mean, we can discount all the rip-off downloads of all of the albums, blah, 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 blah.
I've wondered about that, having complete albums up there.
You can't do anything about it. So,
that's going to take them down.
Certainly Sony is not going to do anything about it, right? So if they did, that would be really nice, but they aren't going to do that. So no, it's everything else. It's like I have said, oh, we don't have any fan lit, but as I see, the animations really are a kind of fan lit, and there's a lot of animated commercials and that kind of thing. I was astonished. I could hardly stop at everything. There was so much, you know. I just go past the records because, you know, they're MP3s. I mean, it's like listening on AM in 19.
Yes, not high quality stuff, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So, oh, and the other thing that is also here on the island that people can check out is the Rob Shouten Gallery, and that's where my artwork is. They're my art dealers, and you can go to there and take a virtual studio tour or gallery tour from the last show that I had up earlier this year of what I think are pretty funny and wonderful collages. So check into that. Shouten is Schouten. He is a wonderful Dutch guy married to a terrific poet named Victory. And once again, you know, great people on this island. A fine gallery that's just up the road a piece from here. That's just another thing that's happening.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, so the big archive is, of course, it's even more important now that, you know, Procter & Bergman's storage unit was ripped off.
Oh, man, that's horrible. Just horrible.
Yeah, yeah. And so who knows, I may have the only posters. Or, you know, when I spoke to Una, she said, you know, when Taylor comes through, she's got 10 or 15 boxes of things of Phil's.
Oh, cool.
So we'll not know until Taylor has the chance to identify that material, and that'll be, he'll be through town, through the island, and down to see Una very soon. We all really have her in our hearts all the time. It was such a dreadful, dreadful shock.
Indeed.
And it's really, you know, it takes a time to recover, as you know, from those kinds of the sudden deaths or any kind of death. Really. It takes a while to recover.
Well, as I said before, if you can throw up some of those links that you were talking about after we're finished here, that'd be really cool so people can check them out on the web. And
I will do that. And let me see, is there anything else that I need to say? Anyway, we might do a crowdsourcing thing for
crowdfunding, I think it is,
for
actually. Yeah.
Radio Free Oz. because I think people can get behind that. I don't know how many, you know, there's a regular Oz audience plus the crossover.
Sure. And
for people who can't make it that far back in time, it is 50 years ago. You know, it's funny. It's like talking about Burns and Allen or you know, 50 years. If you track back, there wasn't even any radio on 50 years before the Fireside Theater. You know?
I hadn't thought of that, but that's probably true.
There wasn't. Let's say we were doing in 1970, we were doing Dear Friends. Well, 50 years before that was 1920. Broadcasting didn't really start until 1926. And that was
hard. Yeah, right.
So,
it is something quite history.
The other thing I'm looking for as part of this whole 50th anniversary celebration, which really really should start on July, but then the big event would be November 17th, which was the first broadcast on Radio Free Oz that we all four were on. So we're kind of heading to that November 17th of next year. And my birthday is just before that. And my birthday makes me older than anybody, so that will be my 80th birthday, if you can imagine such a thing.
Wow, very cool.
On the 6th of, on 12-6, now it's 16, but we'll go back to 66. And then the next March in 67, that was the first Love It, and 67 was really... a wonderful year that people don't know a great deal about because the albums hadn't come out yet. We weren't really in the public. We hadn't gone on the road. We hadn't done anything except work together for all those years. And I'm really happy that before Peter died, he knew that we had those two books, Profiles in Barbecue Sauce, and the other one, Exorcism in Your Daily Life, that that really bring that very early Radio Free Oz script, those really funny scripts out. And if I know Taylor's plans is to release the whole Magic Mushroom set of shows. There's only one missing, and I think if Phil Proctor and I could find two willing performers. Why, we could recreate the missing program, and then we'd have
it. I think Kat says he might have it.
Really? Not, well, if I don't know. Kat, get in touch with
Taylor.
Taylor, and do it soon. Speaking of Kat, he asked me if my interest in fairs, I guess Bozo's was on, at least it was on when I tuned into .com. And if my interest in that was piqued by having been to the San Francisco Fair in 1939. And yes, that's true. But as I remember that we were looking for a new medium. We'd done radio, we'd done television, we'd done movies. The new medium that we seized on was Disneyland, was an interactive and, robotized medium.
Did you check out the World's Fair in New York in 66, or what was it, 64?
No, the only one, 64. I know a lot of people who did go there, but it was really that 39 fair. It was quite beautiful on the Treasure Island in San Francisco, and there was the 39 fair with the Trilon and Perisphere in New York. But then I got into the 1933 fair in Chicago, and that's where the Bozo ride comes from there. The buses come from there. There are a lot of references to the 1933 fair, World's Fair. Well, it was not really a World's Fair, but it sort of sat for one. And then there was, of course, the Renaissance Fair that we'd been involved in right from the beginning. So that also suggested, fair was a very common word in our language. Well, before anything else, you wanted me to say something about Radio Now Live because you're going to play it, right?
Yes, indeed, sir.
Well,
how was made?
Here's let's see. Here's what I've got. let's see, 25 April. I think that's when it was recorded. And I say, well, on Sunday the 25th, that must have been before the show that was recorded, one show down out of four, a sellout last night at the Aladdin, a sort of modestly hippie ex-movie theater, your typical Oregon crowd, transplants in their 50s, with this strange intensity about Firesign Theater. It had been a tough year. That was April. We'd been working since January. We'd been developing the album that you know, and doing the business for the album that became Boom Dot Bust. Mm-hmm. We were writing that. We did a TED performance. We did a whole bunch of just miscellaneous things. Proctor was in the Rocky and Bullwinkle movie.
Oh, and really?
So he wasn't around for a lot of that. He was a director in it, I believe. And so he wasn't around for a lot of the development sessions. We put together a show that begins at the beginning, and as much as anything, because I felt that we'd never done that piece of material live, and it was a wonderful poetic voice piece, and I thought it would be a great way to start. And so we held on to that as an opening. In the beginning, there was this turtle. And the audience, you know, ooh, and all of that. It got the audience involved and got people howling and
Being
wind. And it was a very good start to a show.
It sounded like the audience was really, you know, working off of the group, and you guys were just having a lot of fun.
Yeah, because it was very, and so that was the opening night. And let's see. Do I say anything about the run on the 28th? I'm in Portland. The run is over at the Aladdin. PB's performance was drastically improved by Melinda's work with him. Peter was really nervous about this show, I recall, and very worried about all of his ad libs. And he was, Melinda did a terrific job of coaching him and getting him down into performance. Nick, of course, is a huge crowd pleaser. I've had to fight to keep the Bozos open clean, but it's playing well now. The Oregon crowds were respectful, awed even by the chance to see us and get up close after the show.
Very cool.
The Aladdin, though hippie funky, was perfectly adequate, and even the small stage worked okay. So that's right out of my journal. But it was tough getting to that point, putting the show together. And I think in this recording, which I don't have it in front of me, but Richard Fish was in there. He may have done it with the final mix on it. We had really great help at the hall, and this was that sweet little girl who opens the show.
Where'd she come from?
She was the daughter of one of the people from KBOO Radio, who are just darling, and
so they broadcasted.
And they had, you know, family radio shows back in the day. You'd bring your family on, and they'd all do the radio show. And I had Orson on when he was like 2 years old doing a show of Disney music. I mean, everybody did that if you had kids and they wanted to do it. And so,
did you do a video of that? Is there a film of that?
I don't think so.
That's too bad, because that would have been fun to watch, I think.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. You know, we did some shows, but you know, media just was changing so rapidly at that point that you could never get it on anything that was consistent. Now you can, you know. You can paste cameras all over the stage.
Sure.
But it was that's not until the 21st century. We're still in 1999.
The old days, huh?
The century hadn't changed yet. So, but we had that, we fixed the album pieces. So we felt that they worked. And Give Me Immortality is a wonderful piece for character. and Phil's in particular. Bebop Lobo is just a wonderful character, a great voice, and we all were really dancing around him in that show to really keep up with Bebop one way or another. I cut Danny Vanilla out of the stage show because I could never do him properly. In the album, he's just in love with the princess goddess and can't believe she's dead. And he's just a tragic character. And it was very hard to come out being tragic in the middle of a comedy. It really was. And so I ultimately said, guys, we just can't do that segment. I'm cutting it. And so it was out by the time that this was recorded. And then I guess we had to do Ralph Spoilsports, so that was the way we got into being on the radio. And then we had to do Nick Danger, because we always had to do Nick Danger, because everybody wanted us to do Nick Danger, no matter how many times we or they had heard it. And we just had to get used to that, you know. And then I think, I haven't listened to it again, but I believe these are pretty definitive performances of the four scenes from Anything You Want To. And I know there was an elaborate introduction of the acting company, you know, so it had its own completely original idea for the radio show. We always wondered how we could make it work, you know, and because there are so many characters, and how to get outside the characters, or are we them, or when you're doing something that's been recorded or even just written. You know, if you were to pick up a copy of Anything You Want To today, the script in the script book, and want to perform it, you'd have to be pretty good, because there's a lot happening there that is not really written down, and it's almost beyond. So far, it's been beyond my ability to do a stage performance of Anything You Want To.
Pretty tough, I'm sure, although I did see you guys do some of it in, it was 72 or 73 in Washington, D.C. I'm pretty sure you did some pieces from that.
Oh, I'm sure we did, because it was in almost every show we did, one scene, another scene. I think this one was when we were trying to really pin it down and be definitive about those, at least those four scenes, and get the writing in place, because it started... You know, with the Count of Monte Cristo, which has little or nothing to do with Anything You Want To, except that the four characters were very much the same. But as we did it, it got written and rewritten and rewritten. And if you go and look at the script, it's got 10 footnotes to every page, at least.
I believe it.
There are so many alternate versions of the lines, and they're all funny. You know,
sure.
The lines about Clinton are, you know, which we didn't use after you know, Peter and Phil obviously ad-libbed them. And
yes, right.
Melinda was her name anyway. It's Melinda Gates. Whoever it was in Clinton. You know, so those lines were there, and you had to preserve those lines, but you didn't want to do them in another show, because it would immediately fall on its face as something dated. Oh, I don't want to hear about that again.
I don't know. The Nixon stuff sure has made it through the years.
I'm sorry, I was...
I was going to say, the Nixon stuff that you've done, it certainly has made it through the years. I don't know why Clinton wouldn't. He's quite famous.
Well, I think the political stuff has a really long life. I see that Harry Shearer is doing Richard Nixon right now.
Oh, really?
And I saw another thing on YouTube, Proctor doing Nixon. His just beyond funny.
I believe it.
Possessed, as Phil can get, you know. And that was a Proctor Bergman show called, which became the Americathon movie.
Oh, okay.
And look it up on YouTube. It's Proctor doing Nixon, and they didn't call the show Americathon. There was another name. Forgive me for forgetting. And I had never seen it. I'd seen two or three other Proctor Bergman shows, not their comedy, their one-liner comedy acts that they did, you know, in cellars and horrible places all around the country, But, you know, the shows that they wrote, like TV or Not TV, which were always, although, you know, only two people. When you're used to playing with four, you know, two either makes it a lot simpler or a lot harder. So, because you can never take a break. And it reminded me, yeah.
I was going to say, what this country needs actually turns into more of stand-up than a fire sign routine.
Yes. Oh, yes. All of those other albums, they're all, you know, an attempt to make it as a stand-up pair. I mean, that was, they really tried to do that, and they had a lot of success over a few years, but it was incredibly hard work, and finally it was just too much for Proctor. You know, I think Peter could have gone on forever, but he needed a partner.
A lot of energy in that man, no doubt.
So, anyway, back to the album. So a number of things then got worked together in a kind of, can we do all of these? Can we do the favorites as well as doing the new material or the less known? You know, excuse me, Proctor is once again, you know, his Edmund. Those soliloquies are just hysterically funny and
fantastic stuff.
Built to be really, really manic. What his performance as Nixon, which they couldn't get him off the stage. I mean, he was just into it. look it up; it's on YouTube. Reminded me of the end of
Gothamathon, is what it's called.
Gothamathon. Thank you, whoever answered that question.
Airship L just posted it in chat.
I think it's probably a better show than it was a movie. But, you know, the movie. And of course, they never got credit for it, really. It was based on a, you know, they really got ripped off for it.
That's too
based
bad.
On a play, you know.
Right.
I mean, it was like, just give them some money and get them more work. But it reminded me of Peter's harangue at the end of the live performance of Joey's House. Peter is the preacher in Pay the Lord.
I know that one.
And at this particular performance, he just goes riotously. It's the one that was released many years ago by Fredditor, by Fred Weevil.
Okay.
And it's worth it for that performance. Alone is the way Peter could go when he just completely sailed away. It was much harder, I think, for Phil Austin and for me to get those kinds of pieces. When they came along, boy, yes, you just held right on to them, you know, got out in front of the house, got that moment on stage. Once again, it's very hard when there are four and you're trying to equally distribute the material so everybody has what they need on stage, you know?
Must be quite a process. I can't imagine working it out, frankly.
Well, you know, I've just been reading a biography of Billy Wilder, the movie director, and realizing that we were naturally movie writers. We were just writing movies for the mind. They're always written by teams.
That's a good point.
You always need another writer at least. And there's nothing wrong with a team of men writing a movie. I mean, sometimes you think, oh, I took seven guys to come up with this and it's a terrible piece of shit. but you know, yes, it did, because they were trying to make it less terrible. And so they got another two writers and another two. But remember that, you know, Casablanca was originally written was made into a huge success by the same guy who wrote Mars, the Invasion from Mars.
No joke, I didn't know that.
So you never know where you're going to go and who you're going to be working with and what script they were going to have in their hand. And when we did script write, I wish we had movie script write. I mean, I wish it had gone better than it did. Maybe. It was really hard for us to have a vision of ourselves, even though we were very strongly movie, you know, wanted to do movies badly. And if we had just settled on the silly ideas that we had in the Magic Mushroom shows and just gone out and been silly, I think we could have had a run of films like Cheech and Chong, who were just silly and had only, you know, those personalities and wonderful shtick and were funny. Whereas we were really complicated and thought we were, you know, didn't want to do that simple stuff. We wanted to do the complicated stuff.
Sure.
So
well, compared to the albums, of course, you'd have to.
It's, you know, so ultimately, there's 50 years in a nutshell, my friend.
That's very, very cool. Well, we're looking forward to those DVDs, I can tell you. Everybody's been talking about it.
I've been talking about them for a long time, and I know they're being mastered. I don't think there's any other problem with them. I think they're just being made right now. I'm waiting. Taylor will be here in 2 weeks, and I'll talk to him then about that and all kinds of other things, and we'll make sure that we get for download. It's really important to get the Magic Mushroom shows, the XM shows, the Fools in Space shows, and the whole We're Doomed trilogy.
So you're going to get the downloads, the download store going, you think?
I hope we will get the download store going shortly.
Good deal.
It's my hope. And there's also, you know, there's also, to be crass about it, there's a certain amount of money to be made, and there are people who are quite willing and happy to pay money to download stuff they don't otherwise have, and we want them to be able to have that.
Sure.
And just having some income from the Fireside Theater, you know, Phil Proctor is our treasurer, and we treasure him, and he keeps his hand on the treasury. So it's always nice when he sends us a check from Fireside money, which he does occasionally, once or twice a year. But it would make him very happy to have an influx of checks.
Well, a download store is a wonderful way to do that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep, downloads, and they're immediate, and you know, it's and so that's the thing to come. And of course, everybody's going to want that the movies, because it's, talk about in depth, man. It's going to be, he's got everything in there, so it's really exciting to look forward to it. Hey, and my greetings to everybody out there. I am here. Yes, I'll be 80 next year, but I expect to be around for a long time. My poor partners who didn't get to be 75, I love them and I think about them all the time, and hold them in my hearts, as we all do. So I just want to spend the next year like celebrating them and what we did accomplish so long ago. We had, you know, how many teams last 50 years and are still selling records?
Absolutely.
Just us. All right,
fantastic. And I hope that we can get Taylor on when he's available to talk about all this stuff.
Well, I don't think he's going to be here on Thursday. I think he's coming. He's going to be up at the Science Fiction Convention, the WorldCon.
Whenever he has a chance.
Here on Saturday. But I'll let him know, and he should be on and let you know himself what the time is. Yeah, you know what the time frame is for the DVDs.
Okay, absolutely wonderful. Best to you and Judith.
Thank you very much. Talk to you again soon.
Have a good night, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.